My name is Ali Bektash, and I am a volunteer with the San Francisco Bay Area Independent Media Center.
So, just out of curiosity, how long have you been there?
It'll be a week tomorrow.
And why did you choose to go?
Interestingly enough, I was going to come to Beirut anyways, just to visit friends, and I've never been here. And then this thing happened, and I came here to do, coverage, indie media stuff, help out with various aid efforts that are going on. I had a bunch of friends here, so I talked with them before, see if there was a need, and they said, yeah, you should, come down and help get the story out. Because there's a lot of stuff that, it's like a war, of course, so there's a lot of coverage, but, the emphasis of the coverage is not fine enough. It's very like, oh, this many missiles fell, this many people dead, but there's like a serious humanitarian problem here. So trying to work on that. There's a convoy going down to the south on Saturday, trying to help out with that.
All right, cool. Awesome. So tell me about the humanitarian convoy, like the needs. What's kind of the situation right now?
Sure. Okay. So basically, in Lebanon right now, there's like a huge issue of isolation. In many respects, this isolation is going on. And of course, the isolation imposed by the Israeli military of various regions of Lebanon, various neighborhoods in Beirut, and the whole country, the country as a whole, is affecting the humanitarian aid effort. As ineffective as the United Nations is in providing aid, etc., their convoys are not being allowed through into the south. They've been stalled. The Israelis have declared that anything south of the Litani River, which is the river that they want to move up to in their ground operation, is anything moving, any moving vehicle south of the Litani River is subject to being bombed with missile strikes. And they also just recently announced that any truck moving in the north after 8 p.m. will also be bombed. So it's this slow noose that is being put around the country and suffocating it, And it's not just, the aid, which is totally crucial for people. They're saying that there's at least 100,000 people in southern Lebanon that are still there, that are isolated from the rest of the world. But it's also the country as a whole. For example, there's a huge gasoline problem right now in Lebanon. There's two ships that have been waiting in Cyprus for a week that aren't being given permission from the Israeli military to come here with diesel fuel. And, in the streets in Beirut, there's huge, kilometers-long lines for people trying to buy fuel. Today I saw somebody conserving, 5 fluid ounces of fuel at the bottom of a water bottle. It's a really desperate situation. The electricity, which also is tied into, the petrol, is also lacking. There's now a rationing system of electricity, and most of the day in Beirut, there's no electricity. So, of course, gas is also movement. People can't move around, fill up their cars. Also, there's this curfew being imposed on all moving vehicles. So this obviously affects any type of humanitarian aid possible.
So how is the Israeli military able to dictate what can and can't come in to Lebanon from the port?
I mean, the way they dictate it is by force. They bomb any, they, there's basically, they're terrorizing everything and everybody in Lebanon. For example, there's a photograph which is very telling of a Red Cross ambulance hit on the roof, directly targeted in the middle of the Red Cross painted on the roof of the ambulance. I mean, if this isn't like a clear sign of, what they're capable of doing, then I don't know what is. So, convoys, aid convoys have been hit, have been told that they will be hit, that the front of the convoys have been hit. I mean, this is how the Israeli is enforcing it, by brute force, not by diplomacy or anything else like that. And how would you stop humanitarian aid with diplomacy anyways? It's totally nonsensical.
I don't know a lot about the situation strategically, but Israel came in through the south. And now I'm gathering that they've made it all the way to the north as well, and so they're controlling the north part of Lebanon.
No, Israel is only maybe, you know, they, first of all, they have no real control, ground control of Lebanon. The control on the country is being enforced, you know, from the air. This, you know, anything bombed in the north is anything bombed in Beirut. You know, there's like a heavy air campaign on all of Lebanon right now. So, and, you know, every once in a while, they move 10 kilometers north of the southern border with Lebanon, and, you know, there's heavy resistance in the south. Hezbollah is, you know, every day. There's, you know, yesterday there was 13 Israeli tanks that were destroyed. I think it was yesterday or maybe the day before, there was 11 soldiers that were killed. And but they have this objective of moving, you know, approximately 30 kilometers into southern Lebanon and so-called securing it. So there is, you know, there's there aren't, you know, most of the country, the great majority of the country doesn't have Israeli troops in it.
Okay. And so, now what about food and medicine getting to these, to like the southern parts where the Israeli forces are strongly at?
Well, it's the same situation. Like I said, you know, no humanitarian aid can get in. The other day, I visited the Sana'a Park, where a lot of the refugees from the southern parts of the country have been staying in, and I was talking with the you know, the medical tent there, and they told me that there's a serious shortage in terms of chronic medicine. So, you know, people who are have, for example, diabetes or other types of sicknesses, you know, there's a serious shortage in the south of water treatment medicine, because, you know, when they bomb these towns, they not only bomb the roads, but they bomb, like, water pipes and gas pipes. So, you know, an epidemic is on the horizon in these places, and none of this, these medical supplies can get in.
So if they've got a 10 o'clock curfew and an 8 o'clock curfew in the southern parts of Lebanon, how is this convoy, this humanitarian relief convoy, going to access these communities under these curfews?
Right. So this is the big thing right now. There's a humanitarian aid convoy, which is a grassroots, you know, there's more than 200 organizations that have signed on to it, that is planning on leaving Beirut at 7 a.m., on Saturday. 7 a.m. is 9 p.m. Friday, West Coast time. So they're planning on leaving, and they're planning on taking as much supplies, medicine, food with them in cars, and people with them as well. So, you know, it's an extremely risky mission. These people are putting their lives on the line to go down to the south and bring aid, and also, you know, show a big, you know, show of solidarity to these people. So there is, you know, there is no, like, secure plan. You know, we're going to go this way so we don't get hit by Israeli missiles, but people are still, you know, extremely dedicated and want to go. So, you know, of course, a lot of this, you know, if this convoy is made as public as possible, if it gets as global media attention as possible, you know, maybe it will have as little safety as there is possible on its way down there. So the website for the convoy is www.lebanonsolidarity.org. There's many people, many press contacts that can talk to international press in many different languages. So it's really important to get the word out in this convoy. And of course, you know, August 12th, Saturday, is also the International Day of Protest against this Israeli aggression. And there will be demonstrations all around the world, and there will also be one in San Francisco, as far as I know. So it's important at these demonstrations that one of the messages is solidarity with this grassroots convoy, humanitarian aid caravan, into the south.
All right, are you going to be going with the caravan?
I'll be there in one capacity or another. I'm trying to set up, you know, live connections with rallies around the world and the caravan. I don't know yet. You know, there is a car shortage. There's a gas shortage. Maybe I will be going. Maybe I will not. I haven't made up my mind so far.
When are you coming back to the States?
At this point, it's difficult to leave the country. Who knows what will happen? I have no idea. And another thing is that this, I want to talk a little bit more about the isolation. For example, there's in a neighborhood in southern Beirut in Dahiya, which is a heavily Shia suburb of Beirut, was the most targeted by Israeli bombing. When you visit the place or when you look at pictures, you will definitely notice that the city, this neighborhood has been mostly leveled by Israeli bombs. So of course nobody lives there anymore. People are in various refugee camps around the city, and people from the south who have fled are also in various refugee camps in Beirut. They are isolating various neighborhoods within cities because they didn't just bomb it and that's it. There's continuous bombing going on in Beirut. Every day missiles fall into Beirut, mostly into these southern suburbs. For example, on Monday, there's a missile that hit a residential neighborhood in Chia and killed more than 40 people. The number is still unknown. I visited the sites where the missile hit this building, and I talked with the civil defense person. His name is Faisal Amin. He's 53 years old, and he showed me a list of people who had been, the bodies were removed, and he showed me a list of missing people. And there's 40-something people that have been confirmed dead, and there's just as many people missing. So, just this one strike in this residential neighborhood, has killed maybe 100 people, and this also is going on all over the South. So the death toll from this is really, officially, I think it's around 1,080 right now. I haven't checked it. It might be 1,200. You should check it out. But when the roads are open again and the rubble is cleared, I'm positive it will double at least from what the official figures are. So Faisal Amin shows me this list and he says, "Look, half there's another half as many people who are missing." And for example, there's an internet cafe right next to the apartment building that got bombed, and a kid playing video games was killed in this internet cafe. And there was no warning in this place. No leaflets were dropped. While we were there, while we were conducting an interview with Faisal Amin, the Israeli military dropped some leaflets into this neighborhood, and said they were going to bomb again. This happened today. And of course, everybody fled, So this is what I'm saying. Even after neighborhoods are bombed, they are continually under the threat of being rebombed. So people cannot go back, even to retrieve their stuff, because it's basically, throwing yourself into a possibility of being hit with an Israeli missile. And it's this, for example, today, first time since the beginning of the war, which is July 12th, almost a month now, a month on Saturday, they hit Beirut proper, which is kind of a ridiculous term because, these Shia suburbs are just as much Beirut as are the more wealthy downtown or Hamra districts in Beirut. So a missile struck this old lighthouse, which is actually left over from the French mandate from the 1930s, which was a radio tower being used. And the missile struck this radio tower, and which is located, 100 meters from President Hariri's residence, Lebanese president's residence, right next to the Saudi embassy, and it's the first time that they're hitting, what people call Beirut proper. And if you know, Nasrallah, the Hezbollah leader, said, I think it was maybe 6 days ago, that if this happened, they would strike Tel Aviv. So it's an obvious, provocation on the part of Israel, and things are escalating rapidly here, and it's extremely scary. So the whole country of Lebanon is being held hostage right now, all of the population, by this threat of being struck by Israeli missiles any time of the day, any parts of the country, anything could happen. So it's really important that people around the world on August 12th at the demonstrations need to step it up. This can't be just another march and a rally where people listen to speakers and then go home, There needs to be some serious action taken at all kinds of Israeli targets, whether it's the embassy, whether it's a company that is working with the Israeli military, it doesn't matter. But this, there needs to be, if not a complete stop, it needs to be slowed down by international pressure on Saturday, August 12th, which is the one-month anniversary of the war.
A couple last questions, just simple things. Where can I get, do you know where I can get the official death toll?
Yes, a good source is Naharnet, which is a Lebanese kind of wire service. So the address is Naharnet, N-A-H-A-R-net, N-E-T, .com.
And how many people do you know are looking at going on the convoy?
How many people plan on going on the convoy? I mean, the numbers are still up in the air, you know. First it was 50 cars, 150 people. Now it's a little less because some cars have become unavailable, you know, but we won't know until 7 in the morning on Saturday how many people are actually going on. But it's also important to emphasize that this is not a one-shot thing, you know, the Saturday going to the South. People are organizing it, are calling it opening of a campaign of declaring Lebanon a open country to civil resistance. So they seriously want to have a whole, you know, at least a week-long campaign of continually pressuring, getting aid, and reclaiming the south of Lebanon and repopulating it and, you know, just making sure that it is not cut off and isolated as it is now.
All right. Any reflections you'd like to share before we call it an end?
I just reflected a bunch.
Thanks, Ali. Be safe.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.